Hey, this is the coach, Brendan Sir. And again, before we start our podcast, I wanted to tip you off, give you a little inside info on what we're doing. Come Monday, we're launching a PhD in coaching course. This is something that, again, we've really been working hard on. What we wanted to do, we felt that one of the greatest areas in coaching is the art of coaching and what we call the science of coaching. The science of coaching is all the sports science, all the training and conditioning, all the strategy that's used, all the schemes and tactics that you as a coach in any sport use. The art of coaching has nothing to do with the sport, has everything to do with the people. And so what we are doing is we've done a 13-lesson course in the art of coaching. I think you'll find the experts that we've engaged in this that you will learn from are spectacular. This has been 40 years of my coaching, along with people that I've coached with and experts that I've studied and learned from, as well as what I think are the most important things you need, no matter what type of team you're coaching, male or female, to make you successful and take you to the next level. I don't care how successful you are, how many games you've won, there's no finish line. And if you don't think you can get better or improve, then don't have your players do anything in player development. This is something that will take you to the next level. We have piloted this and run this by some of the very best coaches in sport, and the reviews that we've gotten have been off the charts. So I think you're going to love this. On Monday when we introduce this, we'll tell you about some bonuses of signing up that I think you'll say, how can I not? That's a big tease, but I can't wait to tell you on Monday all about my PhD in coaching course. I wanted to announce a new partnership between Coaching U and InnerZone Sports. You know, for a long time, one of the intangibles by coaches and athletes is team chemistry. And it's a major factor all the time in whether a team has success or failure. When the folks from InnerZone came to me at Coaching U and said, we can even help your team, I was all ears. And what we did is we took a quick assessment, 2 to 4 minutes each person, and we were stunned by what we found out about ourselves and our team. You owe it to yourself to find out what InnerZone can do for your team. It's the simplest and fastest and most accurate software available to measure team chemistry. I highly recommend, without any reservation, the use of InnerZone with your team, whether you are middle school, high school, college, or professional team, to help take you to the next level. For further information, go to coachingulive.com/InnerZone. That's InnerZone. Hey, welcome to another Coaching U podcast with the coach, Brendan Sir, and our guest today is David Patrick, the head coach of University of California, Riverside. David and I worked together at LSU when we coached Ben Simmons. He is the godfather of Ben. David is one of the very best people I've ever met in basketball. He's a high energy, great teacher, great recruiter, great basketball guy. He is a valued, trusted friend of mine who we talk every single day about basketball and life. I think you're really going to get an enjoyment out of listening to David Patrick. After this break, we're going to come back with DP. Fast Model Sports is the world's most versatile basketball coaching software to help power your preparation. Fast Model has developed the industry's best coaching software, including the number one play diagramming and playbook software, FastDraw. FastDraw bridges the gap between whiteboarding and the digital world with an incredibly easy-to-use interface that can be used on both your computer and your iPad, providing maximum portability for your own personal play and drill database. It doesn't stop there. Along with FastDraw, they have other great programs such as FastScout, which I have used, which helps coaches create clean professional scouting reports customized for your team. Fast Model is trusted and used by every NBA team and WNBA team and 85% of Division I college teams and over 8,000 high school and youth teams from over 75 countries around the world. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching resources through their blog and PlayBank. which features over 5,000 free plays and drills for their online coaching community. For access to these plays and more information, visit fastmodelsports.com or follow them on Twitter at fastmodel. My guest today is David Patrick, the head coach of the University of California, Riverside, the Highlanders. And David and I work together at LSU and is absolutely, as a disclaimer, one of my very best friends in coaching and a person who is one of my people that I rely on as my friend and life coach. Welcome, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Coach Sir. Thanks for having me on your call, and I couldn't be greater than talking to you.
Well, listen, when we worked together every day at LSU, and then when you went on to TCU, we had a conversation with you where you shared with coaches, you know, what it's like to go to another program and stuff like that, and what, you know, the impact that you can make as an assistant. But now, after 2 years at TCU with incredible success, now, you know, you have your own job. When you took this job last, you know, we'll say technically last April, but it was more technically March of last year, let's start to talk about all the things that went into it. Number one, the process of being a very highly, you know, I don't want to say ranked, but one of the people that was one of the most prestigious assistants in the country, the rising stars of coaches, and all of a sudden opportunities present themselves. What went into you making the decision to take a head coaching job?
Look, I think first and foremost, Coach Sir, I know we talked about when we were assistants about how we don't always try to get better personally. And when I say that, I mean in the summer, whether it's getting out to camps or speaking at clinics or going to different places where you can learn as a coach. And, mm-hmm. and I was fortunate to take that that message you gave me as an assistant probably 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and start doing that more. And basically spending time on yourself as much as you work for your current universities, if you're an assistant coach or even a head coach, I think you have to put some time in for yourself. And so I started doing that every summer and whenever I could get to a clinic. And I say that to say, I went and spoke at a good friend of mine, Diedrich Taylor's think tank, 2 years ago out in LA. And he had assistant coaches and current head coaches and administrators talk, as well as search firms. And it's a great event, but in that event, my current AD, AD Tamika Smith-Jones, happened to be in the audience. And, you know, I presented my topic, and it was amazing that she gave me a card and told me to stay in touch with her. And as the year went on, you know, unfortunately for the previous head coach, she made a change. Well, that connection I made at the clinic or at the coaching forum allowed me to already have a connection to the athletic director. And so as an assistant, a lot of times, if you don't know the AD or you don't know the search firm involved, no matter how good of an assistant you are or how good of a coach you are, it's hard to get this opportunity to be a head coach. And so I was just fortunate to be in the quote-unquote right place at the right time and I guess have the characteristics that she was looking for when she had to hire a new head coach. And so I think a lot of the stuff you and I have talked about helped me at least get in this seat as the head coach at the moment.
You know, David, that's a great point. You know, Chuck Daly once told me, he said, "Brendan, you're never going to get a job with a resume. That's not how it happens." And I'm like, okay. And he says, "You're going to get a job on social contact that you have with a person that's hiring or someone that's very close to the person that's hiring." Mm-hmm. And when he said it to me, as most times, I didn't really understand it. And when I look back on my career now, David, you know, I've been working, you know, 40 plus years, and I've never once got a job with a resume. Zero. Not
for
one.
Sure.
And every one of them was a contact, a personal relationship with the person hiring or someone else. And so what you did is basically you proved that, because This is a person who you got to meet, who had a relationship with you because you met her at an event where she got to hear you really present and really say, that person's an articulate voice that could represent my program. She put it together. You didn't put it together for her. And that, I think that is so valuable. So, you know, Dedrick, as you mentioned, Dedrick, he's an incredible guy. And he also, like yourself, is a continual learner and stuff. And I think, you know, we can't emphasize enough to coaches that besides developing themselves, I think there's two questions you have to ask yourself every day. What am I doing to develop myself? And then what am I doing to develop others? And I think you are one of the really, really great examples of that, because every day that I was with you, you were always trying to get better. And then most importantly, you were always investing in other people to develop them, whether it be players, other coaches, managers. You know, you were always investing in people, just office staff, support staff, making them feel important and appreciative. And I think that's a unique quality that serves with your personality, David, you know. And how is that now taken over at Riverside, where you don't know anyone other than your athletic director, who's terrific, but that's all you knew. And you're in a place that you worked once before in that state, but in a different part of the state. What was it like going in where you don't really know anyone?
No. Well, I'll tell you this, you know, and just to touch back quickly on what you talked about, you talk about relationships. And one thing was knowing the athletic director, which was who I knew. But now she had to be able to pick up the phone and call some other people to kind of cross-check her first impression of me. Uh-huh. And if you go back to our times at LSU and for all these other coaches that are at other places, you never know whether your academic lady that's on staff or your young associate AD that may be on staff, they'll move in higher positions at some point. And so on that journey, you know, Erica Lavender, who was our academic lady at LSU, had now moved on to be associate AD over at Toledo. Well, she knew AD Jones. So, you know, I handled myself well with her as well as I could, you know, especially dealing with her all the time with our student athletes, but didn't treat her in a bad way at all. You know, and then my athletic director, Chris Del Conte at TCU, AD Jones had been at his talks before, had a great relationship with him. And so you don't want to be fake amongst your relationships you have with people on campus, but you never know who's going to be able to help you down the line in terms of if you're trying to move on to get a head coaching job. And so I think that's important when you touch on relationships with people outside of your coaching circle, because, you know, these are administrators and there's a little bit of coaching. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on and just being a head coach and calling plays, you know? And so I wanted to make sure I touched on that.
All right. So you've heard me preach over the years when I get on my very small soapbox, not high off the ground so I don't fall, but you know, that, you know, as a head coach, David, when you're an assistant coach, you're going to, you know, when you're at TCU or an LSU, you're going to get to spend 10% of your time only on basketball. And then, but guess what? When you become a head coach, it's going to go to 17 to 20%. You know, so all you dreamt about is being a head coach. And now, because now you're going to get to call ball plays, plan practices, do all the great things that you want to do, coach a team, you know, develop a group. And unfortunately, only 20% of your time is really on basketball. Let's talk about the other things that go into being a head college coach. Okay, when you get this job, what is the list of top couple of things that you know you have to take care of? What's on your immediate list when you take that job? Let's go April, you know, of 18.
See, got it. Perfect. Well, I think one of the first things I did is I kept on the interim head coach, which is not normal. Because a lot of people come in and change their staff, but Justin Bell was the interim here. I'd known Justin for probably 10 years and trusted him. So Justin played here and coached here. So I kept somebody on that had seen it through the other lens and was able to tell me what he thought needed to be improved. And so, you know, when I came in, you know, UCR, UC Riverside has only been a Division I program for 14 years. And so first we needed to brand our program, and branding in this day and age with social media, has been a huge proponent in any organization. And so we had no real base of that. So I've tried my best to hire a staff that was savvy in terms of putting stuff, whether it be on Instagram or Twitter, and just get out followers up, get out brand out there. Mm-hmm. Stuff you don't think about too much as an assistant. You know, the other part was finding out, you know, what are the academic rigors here? Mm-hmm. The UC system's a great academic system, so not every player can survive here. And I think there's one thing to get great players, but if you got players that can't be eligible and stay on the floor, you're doing it in vain. And so we had to go through our roster and see what guys can not only make it from a basketball standpoint, but make it through the academic rigors of this school. You know, it's not TCU, it's not LSU, where you have the same but the big academic departments because mm-hmm. of football. So we needed guys that could be self-sufficient, and we're able to do that. You know, you have to start bridging the community and your city where you're at. So I made a conscious effort to get out in the community, through a couple barbecues where I had the different factors from around the community come and just be present, you know, and get to know them and get that, let them feel our program. You know, the one thing I knew coming here, well, which I didn't know, was, you know, we have 30,000 students here. Wow. So we need to do a job of getting out on campus and where the students can, you know, touch us and see us daily, whether it be eating on campus every day, or today we have a hoop fest on campus, but different ways where they can connect to us. Cause I didn't think the student population knew that they even had a Division I program here that could be supported. And sure. So that's on me and my staff, to do that, you know, daily, you know. And so there's so many other factors, and that has nothing to do with what offense I'm running, what right. defense I'm running. We needed to change our uniform. You know, I thought, what separates us? You know, a lot of the UC systems, most systems are blue and gold. And
how about that?
For whether it be UCLA or Cal or the other teams in our conference, which I won't name, they're all blue and gold. They're all blue and gold.
How about so, that? Yeah. I'm thinking about them now, and I'm saying, wow, you're right.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't know that taking the job. But,
of course not.
You know, I've tried to change out gold, make it kind of an electric fluorescent gold similar to Baylor, which I thought
yeah.
they did a great job of branding themselves, Oregon football and basketball sure. have done. So just sitting there and doing those things on my own have been ways of trying to separate ourselves, you know. So there's a litany of things that come up daily, and I call you and complain to you every morning about what I didn't know. But it's great challenges, you know, and anytime you're trying to change a program and change your perception, it's not all what you do on the floor. It's what you do out there to get me and my program out in front of the community.
So, yeah, let's talk about, okay, now, I think when any program, any sport, men or women, when you get the job, the immediate thing you've been thinking about, and you've been thinking about it, we all do, we all have a list in our pocket of people that were interested in hiring if I ever got a job. Okay, mm-hmm. Did you have a list?
I had a list.
Okay, did you get any of the people on your list?
I did. I got some of the people on
yeah,
my list.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Which is great, you know. And you've told me that. I'm very close to Eric Musselman and Porter Moser, and they told me always, as you start getting ready for your job, as well as you always have a list of guys that you may or may not hire, you know, and mm-hmm. Have a plan B as well, because you probably can't afford them if you're here. So I was
We know a couple know that you couldn't, but that's all right.
Here's what I didn't know. You know, I knew at St. Mary's, and this is similar to when I was an assistant at St. Mary's, that, you know, we're going to have to roll our sleeves up as a head coach and assistants, and no work is beneath us, you know, and you don't have to do that at a Power Five. You know, you don't have to wear as many hats
sure.
when you're at a Power Five school. And so here, I needed guys that were not only savvy enough on the court and that I could trust first and foremost, but I needed guys that would be okay doing social media, would be okay checking classes, would be okay booking flights and doing meals on the road. And also be able to, you know, this is not a 9-to-5 job. This is, this is a 16, 18 hour job.
Sure.
You know? So I needed guys that were dedicated, to not only make this program great, but, you know, have ambition to move on. And I tell them all, the only way you're going to move up is if we do good here. You know, if not, you'll be down here with me for a while. You know, my goal is not to keep you forever. Win. I want us to win, but I needed a staff, that nothing was beneath them. If that makes any sense to you.
You know, one of the things I remember one day we were practicing with the Pistons, and, at the end of an NBA practice or something, or you're ready to get started in the practice, and there's balls all over the arena. And, you know, you try to get them all, put them in the ball rack. And, you know, we don't have managers in the NBA, as you know. And all of a sudden, the trainer, for some reason, he was pissed off. So he didn't go pick them up. And the next thing I know, here I look, and there's Hall of Famer Chuck Daly picking up all the balls, putting them in the ball rack. He walks into the center circle. The trainer's who's supposed to pick him up, he ain't picking him up. He's standing in the center circle with his arms folded. And Chuck says, no job too big, no job too small for any of us. And I said, I never forgot it. And that's the mentality you have to have. You know, we're all in this together type of thing. So, you know, the first 100 days on a job is always one of the things they talk about, you know, when you get this job. And 100 days sounds like, oh, my God, it's such a long period of time. And 100 days flew for you, you know, April, May, June, and in July, you know. So the first 120 days in a job, you know, you're recruiting for 18, and then you're starting to recruit for 19. Talk about some of the places you had to go and, you know, back to your fertile recruiting ground, you know, and what is Australia for you as a recruiter?
Look, I think, obviously, the lifeblood of any programs, the recruits and the players you have in your system. And so I knew from day one, we had to get better. That's not saying the guys here weren't good enough, but we had to make some improvements. And I was fortunate enough to continue the relationships I had from recruiting at TCU and LSU and in Australia and use that pipeline to get some guys here. So the first commitment we got was an Australian, believe it or not. But it was someone that we recruited at LSU, someone we recruited at TCU, and he just happened to be available when I got the job. And the next guy I got was a 7'1" post player from New Zealand.
Wow.
Who's I think can help us. I'm hopeful. I don't want to put too much on his shoulders, but there again, someone we recruited at TCU, my coach, myself and Coach Dixon have flown out to see him a few times. He got injured late in the season last year, so his recruiting died down a little from the Power Fives. So I made it a priority to get him day one. So he signed in this class, and I can comment on him, Callum McCray. He was one that's already on campus now that came with me. And then the third guy was from Australia on the national team named Dragon Elkaz, similar deal. Sat out last year after graduating, but someone I had a relationship with from my days as an assistant. And I use those three, for example, because you mentioned Australia.
Sure.
And international. I think anytime as you're assistant and you're on the road and you think you've got a head coaching job coming up in the next year or two, you have to obviously recruit for the program that you're at, which is first and foremost, recruit for the people that the name you have on your chest.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to keep I always started keeping like a secondary list of guys. If I got a Mountain West job, mm-hmm. if I got a Big West job, if I got a WCC job, so on and so forth, or a Conference USA job, they may not be good enough for us at TCU, but this guy may be good enough to help us at this next level. And so I started doing that about 2 years ago, and I think it helped me in my transition here as a head coach, because my assistants have only worked for me for 6 months now. They don't know what I like. I know what I like and what's going to work for me. You know, I think after a year or so, they'll figure that out. But I couldn't rest on what they saw. You know, one thing I do know, I think I can evaluate talent.
Yeah.
And I think I know the guys that we brought in, at least from day one, should be able to help us as we try to build this thing.
David, you know, having worked with you and knowing your strengths, you know, you are a great evaluator of talent. You're also a great teacher and coach. What is the David Patrick type of player? What kind of player do you like, you know, if you had your choice in now that you're at, you know, at UCR?
Yeah, for, you know, obviously, if I could find 13 Ben Simmons, that'd be great. But they don't fall off trees. But I think the one thing that you can attest to, and if I think about the pros that I've been fortunate to coach in college, you got to be a self-motivated worker, high IQ, and tough. You know, and I think if you have those three things, especially somewhere, I don't say like this, but if you work on your own without your coach telling you to get in the gym and get extra shots up, it takes so much weight off your plate. I think as a as a head coach or an assistant, if you just try to get talented guys that don't have any ambition to work and just resting their laurels of their God given ability, I think it's hard to win consistently. And when I look at the Final Four teams and the teams that have success in the tournament, even our teams at TCU, and we were tougher and worked harder, I think, than most teams. Probably not the most talented, but it gave us the chance to work hard. You know, LSU, we had an abundance of talent, and, you know, we played great some nights and great not so well the other nights, but we had a great amount of talent. And then at St. Mary's with Coach Bennett, like, and I learned that from him, you got to get workers that want to be in the gym on their own. And that's the only way that you can even yourself to the more talented teams. And so that's kind of what I look for.
You know, we never thought when we were evaluating players in the NBA, either of us, that, you know, that we would ever value what we call playing hard, you know, as a talent, but it is playing hard. Passion, love of the game, as a talent, but it now has become one because there's so many kids that, unfortunately, maybe it's the AAU where they're playing 75 games in the summer that they don't love to play like others used to. But I think it's so important that, as you mentioned, that, you know, guys that love to play, and when they do play, they step between the lines, they play hard because it makes your job so much easier.
Oh, it does. You know, especially with the restrictions that you have on, you can be on the floor with players and whatnot nowadays. If they don't, the time we have with them is not enough to get to where you're trying to get to. And so they need to be able to get in on their own and do extra work, you know. And I think the last part I want to touch on, coaches, you know, I have two wonderful daughters who, you know, Bailey and Madison.
Love them.
But I want players that I can trust around my kids, you know, whether I have daughters or men, like the, no matter how talented you are, can I have my kids around? Or if I leave the gym, can I trust that they're not, you know, that they're going to handle themselves right? And if they can do that, then I can sleep well at night. You know, I don't want to have to worry about if they're up to mischief, you know.
And that's great. No, you're right. Character guys are so important. That's, as you know, that's what we look for at the next level. You know, is this guy someone that's going to make good choices? And is this guy someone that is high character? And because those are the guys you win with at the end. Hey, let's take a second to tell you about one of our partners, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish basketball shooting machines are the most high-tech and durable basketball shooting machines on the market today. Each shooting machine was designed specifically for high repetition training to allow players to improve through technology. Dr. Dish offers game-like training to give hundreds of shooting reps in just minutes and to provide powerful analytics to help players improve their game. Dr. Dish has also introduced Skill Builder, which is the first of its kind of basketball shooting industry that enables coaches and players to stay connected, design and upload training exercises that combine shooting, conditioning, and ball handling into one complete workout, and instantly receive feedback on their workout, allowing for real-time adjustments and improved performance. It is without question the most innovative basketball training machine on the market. It's been the official shooting machine of Coaching You for the last 2 years. To learn more about Dr. Dish, log on to drdishbasketball.com or follow them on Twitter at drdishbball. But the David Patrick team this year and in the years to come, what's it going to look like from a style standpoint, D? What's your team going to play like?
Look, I'm hopeful we not just shoot the ball, but we make shots. You know, I think, you know, I've come from a foundation of where we're shooting is key, and making threes on the offensive end, playing with pace. We're kind of going to be a 4-out-1-in team. I'm not giving away my scout, but that's where we how we'll play. And to do that, you need an interior presence, which I think we'll get. We're going to be tough defensively, and the one thing that these guys can tell you every day, all I yell about is rebounding, because I think the two guys I've worked for, and Jamie Dixon and Coach Bennett, harped on rebounding, and I know that travels on the road when you're missing shots, when you're making shots, and that comes down to the toughness part, mm-hmm. You know.
You're 100% right. Yep.
And so I think you're going to find a team that's fun to watch in the offensive end, but a team that's tough rebounding the basketball and gritty defensively.
And I know you have a tough schedule this year, and I know your conference is a very underrated conference. There's some really good teams and excellent coaches in that league. But tell me, when you're recruiting, and again, from what I, you know, from what I know from our talks, is that, you know, frankly, as all coaches do, you're trying to recruit a player that, frankly, is been better than maybe some other schools in the conference have gotten. That's the key to any successful program. But what is your pitch, let's say, and you're a great salesman, what is your pitch to a recruit to come to UCR?
Look, I think early on you're our guy. It's my first year. And so you're part of the foundation and the fabric of what I'm building. But when you come down here, there's a lot to sell when you get here. I told you we have 30,000 students. The weather's fantastic. The university and the academics here are second to none. We have a fantastic chancellor in Kim Wilcox, who had been at Michigan State and been at Kansas. So he understands basketball, and wants it to be good. You are very close. You're an hour from LA. You're 35 minutes from Newport Beach. We play against Hawaii, who's in our conference. So, and we play a national schedule. And I think, you know, we have an international airport right here in Riverside, Côte, Ontario, which people don't know about until they come here. So there's a lot to sell in this region. I think is we have great coaches in this league, and you touched on them from Dan Munson to Jim Less up at UC Davis, and who have won at other places, Russell Turner at UC Irvine. So we have older coaches that are seasoned and great at what they do, and we have great young coaches, and, you know, Aron Gannat over at Hawaii and Deidre Taylor at the Fullerton. I think with me, you're getting a guy that's not a quote-unquote player's coach, because I know that's easy to say, oh, that means you're soft, but I can relate to them, I think, on other levels than a lot of other coaches can't. You know, I'm not that far removed from playing, and I still think I'm cool, so I understand. I think I can relate to players and earn their trust right away, you know, very quickly, which I think I have with the group that I inherited. You know, I'm going to be fair but hard, mm-hmm. and I think that's all you want. My phone is open to any player, any mother, any coach. My practices are open. I don't close them, so that's nothing great. I'm doing is behind closed doors. Like it's an open book for anybody.
What's your biggest challenge this year in your first year? I mean, we could probably have a list. I mean, everyone does. No, I mean, I don't care if you're in the NBA or in the NFL or in Power Five or any league, or if you're a high school coach. What, you know, everyone has challenges, and sometimes we have some. But if you had to say, what are three challenges for your team? What would you say they might be? Or what are you going to challenge them on? Maybe is even better.
For sure, you know, I think our biggest challenge is going to be youth, and it's not an age. Mm-hmm. It's youth that we have one guy that averaged over 25 minutes a game. Wow. Everybody else averaged, the next guy averaged 14 minutes. The next closest guy averaged six. And so I have a team.
So it's experience.
I don't have experience, you know, and I have, you know, five freshmen that this is all going to be new to them. Mm-hmm. A junior college transfer who we all know there's a big gap between JUCO and Division One because you're asked to do different things at this level. And so experience is going to be tough and going to be new. You know, I have a staff that's never worked with me before. And so they're going to get to, you know, learn me. And we all know coaching in practice is a lot different than coaching in games. And so, there's going to be some trial and error, there as they get to know me along the way. We have a challenging schedule because we have a lot of travel early. You know, we go to Western Michigan, we go to Valparaiso, we go to Air Force, we go to Oregon State, we go to Portland State. And so we are going to be racking up. We go to UTEP, El Paso. So, we'll be racking up some frequent flyer miles early, and it's how do we adjust to that early? How do we act on the road? You know, you can't play the same way at home as you do on the road.
I agree with that.
Some of these guys are going to be their first road game, you know, and so they're going to be a lot of the challenges that we face. You know, shoot, I've been used to being on charter planes the last 6 years with you, and so. Now we're going commercial. I mean, I'm not, that's nothing below me by any sense. But
you know,
that's a different line.
You just reminded me of when I went from the NBA to coaching a CBA team in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it was my first head coaching job. And it wasn't, frankly, that much different. I had 10 players on my team only. I had no assistant coach, no video person. How about that? And so. I remember we bused to games or we flew into Chicago and took the smallest plane they had at O'Hare to some remote city. And it was a different lifestyle. And that was the hardest part of job for me. The easiest part was the players. I loved the players. I loved games. You know, the coaches in my league back then were Eric Musselman, Mike Tebow, the coach of Washington. You know, and the coaches were phenomenal. But the basketball was great, and I look back at my players. My Konzo Martin, the coach of Mizzou, was my one guard, you know, and Devin Booker's daddy, was my other guard, and you know what? Basketball was basketball, but more importantly, I made that job going from a world championship and dream team coach to all of a sudden coaching a job for personally nothing. I said, you know what? I'm going to make this the best job in the world. And that's my encouragement to you, is that it's the best job that you have right now. It is fabulous. And what an opportunity these kids have to be coached by someone like yourself. David, it's going to be an experience that they'll never forget. The impact and influence you're going to have over these young people in their lives is going to be incredible. And that's the best part of coaching. And they're lucky to have you. And at the same time, I know how appreciative you are to have them. And so it's just going to be such a neat experience. I can't wait to follow you on your journey this year and to watch you grow as a coach, and knowing that, as our friends, you know, I know you're not a Nike school this year, but that I love the saying that they have at Nike is there's no finish line, and every day you and your team is going to get better, and that's what's so appreciative. So I can't wait to come out and see you, can't wait to watch you, and I'm so proud of you.
Thanks so much, Coach, and thanks for being a part of my journey and my continued journey. And you know what a great thing you're doing for all coaches around the world, not only in the U.S., but with your Coaching You podcast and whatnot, it's a great way to learn for anybody that follows you. So thanks for being a part of me and my family's life.
Oh, well, you know, it is. And so that's what we have. We have a basketball family all over the world. And I'm lucky that you came into my life and helped change me for the better. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
David Patrick. Phenomenal. I'm telling you, this is a rising star in our industry, but more importantly, one of the great people that I've ever met in basketball. If you get a chance, really follow him. Follow him on Instagram and stuff. He is so good, and he is, as a person, second to none. I think you'll really enjoy watching him in the future, his teams, and what he's doing out west. Again, I want to tip you off to something, as I mentioned in the very beginning. to what's happening on Monday. We're going to launch my new PhD in coaching course, which is a course that has nothing to do with basketball, but everything to do with the art of coaching, any sport, male, female. It is something that we've been working a lifetime on, and I think you're really going to be excited. Until next week with our next podcast, this is the coach, Brendan Searle.